Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. We're playing the bells of freedom because we won. We won, we won, we won. You know, last night about 11:40 at night, I was on the internet and I read that the Mexican torturer, rapist, and murderer, Medellin, who had tortured and raped two young girls with his buddies in a gang rape, was finally executed, and I started to celebrate inside saying, thank God for the United States Supreme Court, thank God that we have a nation that will stand up to these donkeys in the world court who try to stop this. And I want to talk about this for a minute, because what bewilders me is that this story of the execution of this Mexican rapist, torturer, and murderer being executed is not to be found in any major media sources. I searched the web far and wide. I searched the web high and low. Wolfie Blitzer, who yesterday was like Jerry Mahoney about the world court stepping in and trying to stay his execution. All of the other puppets in the media, the chorus boys in the media, the chorus girls in the media, yesterday were in a rage that he was about to be executed, and they were praying that the world court would intervene and stop the execution of this fiend. But now that the man has been executed for crimes that are so beyond comprehension, you can't find the story anywhere. And it leads me back to what I talked about yesterday on The Savage Nation, Ray Bradbury's novel, Fahrenheit 451, first published in 1953, film in 1966, a science fiction novel, first published in 1953. The concept began with the 1947 short story, Bright Phoenix. 1947, Ray Bradbury, later became Fahrenheit 451. And the novel represented a future American society in which the masses are hedonistic and their critical thought is outlawed. Critical thought is outlawed through book burning and drugging. The original short story told us that. And over the years, the novel has been subject to various interpretations. But what we are talking about is the suppression of dissenting ideas. Now, what you see going on in America today is a hedonistic and rapidly anti-intellectual America. It's a society that has completely abandoned self-control, as in the novel. It is a society filled with lawlessness in the streets, as evidenced by the street gangs in San Francisco and other cities. It is a society out of control, as predicted by Ray Bradbury, with teenagers crashing cars. And so I have to again refer to Fahrenheit 451, because it was a society as envisioned by Ray Bradbury way back when that we are now living in. And in that society, books were burned. Now, of course, today Nancy Pelosi and her boys and girls in the so-called progressive liberal side of politics want to burn talk radio to the ground by passing the Fairness Doctrine. It's the same as burning books. She wants a one-sided approach to any topic or ideas. In fact, she doesn't even want you to have ideas. She wants to think for you. Now, let's go back to clips from a 1982 BBC radio dramatization of Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451, and let's begin with one and two.
The bigger your market, the less people you can afford to offend, especially if you're trying to sell them things. Don't offend minorities. Stay away from controversy. The public knows what it wants, Montag. The captionless comic books, the three-dimensional sex magazines.
Yes, but What about firemen?
Well, what could be more natural? For people to be happy, it's not a matter of all men born free and equal, but all men made the same. Each man in the image of every other, no dissent or disturbance. So a book is a loaded gun in the house next door. Burn it. Who knows who might be the target of the well-read man, the critic, the thinker, the intellectual?
Okay, you get it. Now let's listen to clip four from Fahrenheit 451.
If you don't want a man worried politically, don't give him two sides of a question. Oh, better still, don't even give him one. If the government is inefficient, if it's spending billions on arms and cutting human rights, well, better that than the people worry about it. Give them comics and soap operas and quiz shows. Make the quiz shows clever enough, intelligent enough. The people will feel their thinking. They'll have a sense of motion while they're standing still. They'll be happy because they won't be asking any questions themselves. Don't give them any slippery stuff like philosophy or sociology or politics. In that way lies melancholy. Now remember, we're the happiness boys.
The happiness boys. And of course, now you understand where I'm, where I fit in the American media. I am certainly not part of the happiness boys brigade. I'm on the other side of things. I give you the slippery stuff. And the slippery stuff, in fact, will make you sometimes agitated and sad. It will disturb you. It will make you unhappy. It will make you think. And, of course, it's the only way to freedom. You cannot get to freedom through joy. You cannot get to freedom through happiness. You cannot get to freedom except through the hard way, the rough road, the tough road, the rocky road. And so that's the beginning of the Savage Nation. We're talking today about the execution in Texas last night of Mexican national Jose Medellin, who raped, tortured, and murdered two teenage girls in a gang initiation, despite the objections of the so-called world court. And, of course, this is yet another demonstration of the Supreme Court as George W. Bush's most important legacy, which I've told you before. Despite all of his other failings, it may turn out that it was Bush's appointments to the Supreme Court that will have him remembered as the greatest American president. Not only for this, and it was a 5-4 again. Who was it who saw virtue in the rapist and the murderer? Who was it who wanted the rapist and the murderer coddled? Who was it on the Supreme Court who felt sympathy for the devil and felt nothing for the two girls who were so brutally tortured and raped and murdered by Jose Medellin? The same four. Who were the same four? None other than that buck-toothed wonder, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the communist. David Souter, that sick thing from Washington, D.C. Stephen Breyer, another creature from the Black Lagoon. And John Paul Stevens, a flip-flopper. But he joined them. And Breyer, that creature from the Black Lagoon, wrote the following astonishing thing about the execution of this rapist, torturer, murderer. Quote, he said, "This execution will place this nation in violation of international law." You know, Breyer, you place this nation in violation of America. You are a violation of American values. You and your cronies on the Supreme Court have violated this country for the last 30 to 40 years in a way that the Founding Fathers could never have imagined four individual lawyers could do so. What you've done to this country is you've caused irreparable harm to this nation. But you see, you no longer control the Supreme Court, do you, Breyer? It's a 5-4, and you've been losing one after the other. And you don't like that, do you, Breyer? Because just as in the Fahrenheit 451 story, you want the public to have a one-sided view of things, the liberal side, the communist side, the socialist side, the one-world side, the internationalist side. You don't want the people to have two sides of a story, so you weren't concerned that the story of the rape and the murder and the execution of these girls was not discussed in any of the appeals. In fact, you could care less about the girls. You and Ruth Bader Ginsburg don't care about the girls, because when you want to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. In this case, these two girls were just two little scrambled eggs on your way to banning the death penalty. So you see, Breyer, you lost, and the American people won. This fiend was executed. Now, those of you listening to the Savage Nation, do you know what this fiend did to this girl? This fiend, Jose Medellin, was convicted in a Texas state court of taking part in the 1993 gang rape and murder of two teenage girls in Houston, Texas. Do you know what he did to them? Would you like me to tell you the exact details? I think I will not, for the sake of the honor of these girls. You know, their fathers are still living. In fact, the father of one of the girls was in the death chamber, watching as that piece of human offal died with a lethal injection in his rotten, stinking veins. A man who boasted. Well, I hope that the blood of the Virgin takes him across the river Hades, and he suffers through eternity the way he made those little girls suffer. I hope that in the next world, there is a place for men like him who do this to young girls. And I hope that through eternity, he is raped, he is tortured, and he begs for his life. I'll be right back. Savage. So I'm focusing today on the lead story on MichaelSavage.com, top left, which is last night's execution of Jose Medellin, who so brutally tortured and raped with his gang friends two young girls. He's been on death row a long time. And yesterday the entire media was kvetching over the fact that he didn't get the Mexican consulate. Oh, my God, his rights were denied. Oh, the poor boy. But they didn't tell you what he did to the young girls. So I play church bells. Now I'd like to have your calls. We'll start with Frank in Wisconsin. Frank, go ahead, please. Frank, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Hi, Mike. I'm not saying that I condone what Medellin did, but I believe in the sanctity of life, and I don't believe in capital punishment.
Hold one sentence at a time. Okay, I've heard that. You believe in the sanctity of life. Does that include the unborn?
Yes. I don't believe in abortion, and I don't believe in capital punishment.
All right. I just want to see where you're coming from. I see you're not an extremist. You're just confused. So since you believe in the sanctity of human life, which I do as well, which is what the death penalty is all about, let me explain my position, why I believe execution reinforces the sanctity of life. It reinforces the sanctity of the life of the two girls so brutally raped, Mark. You see, I believe the execution of this sadistic murderer preserves the sacred memory of these two souls because it reinforces this society's abhorrence of the crimes committed against them by this monster. You know, we live in a society that is filled with ambiguities. Some people might say maybe they knowingly participated. Only by putting forward a punishment that says very clearly, this is a crime we will never accept in our society. If you cross that line, you're going to die for it. Only then, I think, can we preserve the sanctity of human life. And I believe societies that have eliminated the death penalty have opened themselves up to even worse crimes against the sanctified humans that we're concerned about.
Okay.
How in the world would keeping this creature alive, Mark? I'm sorry, is the gentleman still with us? Okay,
yes.
How would keeping this man alive reinforce the sanctity of human life?
Because all life is precious, Michael. God created life, and only God can take life.
I believe in God, but I read the Bible. It says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth.
But, Michael, man is infallible. What are you going to do in a situation like in Illinois where people were condemned to death, some people, and they were innocent, and the DNA testing proved that they didn't commit the murder, and they would have died?
Well, they were released, weren't they?
Were released, but how many in the past were executed?
All right, well, here we go into the generalities, but we're not speaking about generalities. We're speaking about specific. You're not arguing that this murderer from Mexico and his gang members were innocent, are you?
No, not at all. I think they were.
Oh, guilty. Because they were given very fair trials, and they were upheld at each level. The only trick his verminous lawyers tried was that he didn't consult the Mexican consulate along the way. The wonderful Mexican consulate that brings us all of the chemicals that Americans need so badly.
Michael, the only point I'm trying to make is that if you are for life, you have to be against abortion and you have to be against the death penalty.
I totally disagree with you. I absolutely couldn't disagree with you more. The only way you reinforce your love of life is by condemning to death those who would take innocent life. That's the way you reinforce your love of life, by saying the innocent people of our society, the children, for example, in this case, these girls were children. They were abducted on their way home from school by this Mexican gang. Shall I be a little more clear? You know what they did to them?
Yeah.
Did you read what they did to them?
Yes, but Michael, lock them up.
No, let's pause for a minute. I'm not going to go into the details. I'd like to know, sir, did you read what they did to these girls?
I know how the girls were treated, Michael. Yes, I know the horrific things that happened to them. I understand that. Lock them up and throw away the key, okay?
Okay, let's pause right here. Lock them up and throw away the key. I've heard that as well, that a life behind bars with a life sentence is a greater punishment than executing them. Well, that would all be good if we didn't have Ginsburg, Souter, and Breyer on the Supreme Court, because they seem to be releasing people who are given life sentences earlier than their life, and they go out and commit the crimes again. In fact, not too long ago, because of the bleeding heart liberals out there, some of the would-be terrorists and terrorists at Guantanamo were released, and they were found to be killing our troops or trying to kill our troops in Afghanistan and Iraq. So how does that work? We release a murderer and he goes out and murders again. We release a rapist and he goes out and rapes again. One thing is for sure, Jose Medellin will not rape another young girl in this world. Do you think so?
No.
Well, right. He won't rape another young girl along a railroad track. And no, he's not macho today, is he? He's a pile of bones somewhere in the ground.
Yes, but Michael, I'm...
And it also sends a nice, strong message. It sends a nice, strong message to other would-be cowardly torturers in this country that if this country catches you, this is not Brussels. You're not going to enjoy yourself. At the end, you're going to be strapped to a chair and a lethal injection is going to be put into your veins and you're going to die a death that is far too good for you. Because he should have actually, in my opinion, been tortured before he was killed. You want my opinion? The firing squad would have been too gentle. I would rather have seen him released into the general population of the most brutal ward of the most brutal prison in America and give the guards 30 minutes off for that day. Give the guards a cigarette break and let him go out into the general
Savage.
Population. Natural-born killer with the parents of his victims watching. A Mexican-born natural-born killer condemned to death was executed last night. And when I saw it on the internet, I searched immediately all the websites, the ones I normally go to, the ones I like, Drudge and the others. And I love those sites. Don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking them, but it was not up. I said, how could this be? How could I? And I didn't know what to do. I couldn't wait to come to work today. And then I fell asleep in almost peacefully, as close as I come to peace at this stage of my life with what I carry around in my head and the stories I have to look at every day. It's like an oncologist looking at cancer. I don't know how well oncologists sleep these days, but it's not too far removed from how I sleep looking at the cancer in American society, particularly the metastasis of liberalism. It may be a fatal disease. I really don't know. But I had a dream. As usual, I'm a very vivid dreamer, and I remember my dreams for a couple of reasons. One, I trained myself to remember my dreams since I'm age 17. I've done a dream regression analysis with myself and my children, as a matter of fact, since they were children. I just did it. I learned it from a Native American. I then augmented it with readings in psychology, and then I put aside all of that and went into my own head and figured out what the dreams mean. Most of them are so clear, they don't need much of an interpretation. Also, I take a lot of B6, and pyridoxine will give you color. You'll dream in color and remember your dreams. So if you're dreaming and awaken in the night from your dreams, stop taking B6. So here's the dream. The dream is I'm in a courtroom in Washington, D.C., and there's an Irish judge. I didn't know he was Irish, but he was sort of a smiling, white-haired priest cop of the 1950s on a high bench in a black robe. And he came down from the bench and he put his arm around me and I said, Your Honor, I came all the way here across this country just to meet you and to hear you speak. I want to thank you for what you've done. And he smiled and beamed at me without saying much. Then his wife came over, middle-aged woman, and she smiled at me and she said, Michael Savage, I'm so glad you're here. We're going to be celebrating in our religion the Day of Redemption tomorrow. Would you join us? That was the dream. I said, what the heck was this? I don't think there's a Day of Redemption in the Christian calendar. There are days close to it. I don't know what it might be, but it was so clear to me that it was stunning. So I'm deeply affected by stories on the Savage Nation. This guy requests a reprieve. It's been a long night, said Randy Ertman, whose daughter was tortured by Medellin and five other gangbangers after watching the 33-year-old beast receive lethal injection. The court rejected his request for a reprieve, with the majority opinion noting that the Justice Department had not sought the court's intervention. Four justices, so-called, dissented. They don't belong in America, these justices. They belong in the world court. In fact, that's where they should be. They should move to Belgium, where they would find compadres they'd be comfortable with. Medellin came to the United States when he was three and grew up in Houston, never sought Mexican consular protections until 4 years after he was arrested. By then, he had already been tried for capital murder, convicted and condemned, said the Texas authorities. But, of course, the International Court of Justice said that this poor boy, and by the way, 50 other Mexicans on death row around the United States, should have new hearings in U.S. courts to determine whether the 1963 Vienna Convention Treaty was violated during their arrests. This is unbelievable. It's incomprehensible. It's incomprehensible. Bush, of course, took the side of the international court. You know that, don't you? The president tried to trump the Supreme Court and defer to the world court. That's to show you how far left Bush is tilting. But there is the Adolfo Pena from the right, the father of the victim, Elizabeth Pena, and Randy Ertman, the father of the other girl. I can't imagine their pain. So there it is. There's my dream. There's the story. Let's go to the callers. Cliff in Houston, Texas, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Savage. I have a rent house about 1,000 feet away from where those two girls were murdered. And my tenant was there the night that it happened. And what the general public doesn't know is that not only were these girls, and they were in such bad shape, the police first thought they got hit by a train. They just couldn't believe that these monsters could do such a thing. And while they did it, the worst part was they laughed. They thought it was funny.
How do you know? I mean, not how do you know. How is it known that they laughed during the sadistic ritual?
Because once they went, when the police took them into custody during their questioning, they were giggling because they didn't think that it was such a horrific crime. It was just part of a gang thing. That's what the American people don't realize. These animals prey on the indigenous people. All they consider Americans, the average American citizen, is a target because we're weak. And these liberals that you scream about all the time, they're out of their minds because they don't think it's ever going to happen to them. Oh, they were just misunderstood. Yeah, right. When it happens to them, they will be the first ones to jump up and down and scream like hell. As long as it happens to somebody else's kid, they could care less. And that's exactly...
It sounds to me like you're not a native of Houston. It sounds to me like there's a little bit of New York in you.
I'm from Bay Ridge in Brooklyn. And when I moved to this stupid state... And I'll tell you one thing. Don't ever elect anything that comes from Texas. If you do, you're asking for trouble.
Whoa. I wasn't too happy with Texas after the FLDS case where they seized so many children based on the flimsy evidence of some monster inside Child Protective Services. Of course, they were found to have been wrong. So I don't know. But I wanted to thank Texas today, frankly, for standing up to the world court. You have to agree with me on that one, don't you?
One thing in a million. Trust me.
Friend, thank you for calling and listening to this show. See? That's all. Bayonne. Like when you watch the opening to The Sopranos, which I don't do anymore because I've canceled HBO because of what they have done with regard to defaming and defacing the U.S. Marines with their new series done by some left-wing vermin from Rolling Stone who they let come in as a embedded reporter. Then he comes back and does a series making our troops look like Nazis to me, he should be arrested and tried for sedition. See, that's not censorship, what I'm saying to you. What he did is sedition. Don't you understand the difference? It's not a matter of opinion. When you put down our troops who are in a war zone, you're committing a crime. That's no longer opinion. Don't you get it? That's like painting a target on our troops. It's the same as when you paint a target on the police, and they have to go out in a war zone every day in our cities. Don't you get that? Don't you understand what they're facing with these gangbangers running around, using police as targets to initiate themselves in gangs to show how tough they are? They're killing our cops. You don't read those stories either, because the department store dummies like Wolf Blitzer won't show you the truth. Instead, every day, sympathy for the devil. Texas again. Mark, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike. Listen, I just want to tell you that, you know, this story, and let me tell you something. I want to give a shout-out to this state that we did what we did to these animals.
We just know that they're socialist internationalists, so let's leave it at that. I'm sure there are many gay people listening to the show who agree that they should have been executed, so I'm going to drop this call because I don't want to be tar-brushed with your bias. That's all. Houston, let's go to New York City. Adele, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yes, I'm just saying the call that you had there was for pro-life, you know. What if they were his two daughters? And how would he take it? How would he feel? Would he have that?
Well, there's a big difference in being against abortion and being against capital punishment. The primary difference is quite clear to anyone who can reason. The unborn are innocent. They're born innocent, aren't they? They don't deserve to die. They didn't commit a crime, correct?
Correct.
Okay. But the condemned murderer is not innocent. The condemned murderer is guilty. And in this case, guilty of a crime beyond any normal human being's imagination. This was a particularly heinous crime. This was not just an accidental murder. This is not someone who banged into someone's car and accidentally committed vehicular homicide. These people tortured and raped and killed these poor little girls. Imagine their parents are still living and the pain they've carried all these years. That's the whole story.
I understand.
Play Rolling Stone, Sympathy for the Devil, for a minute so I can catch my breath.
I want to hope you get my name. Oh, yeah. But what's busting you is the nature of
the theme song of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Souter, and the other left-wingers on the Supreme Court. Sympathy for the Devil, because that's about all they stand for as far as I can tell. Fortunately, they're in the minority right now, and they don't know what to do. They've had a good long run. They had this country locked up for 30 or 40 years. They owned it. They owned it, and they were snickering at us. But no longer. Thanks to George Bush. Turn it off. That's all. Now it's too hectic already. So that's the main story. Mike, a Mexican-born killer put to death in Texas. It's a big story. I really don't know why it's been buried by the media, other than they lost. Their side lost. So they don't even want you to know that they lost. I mean, that's the only thing I could figure out. You'd think since yesterday it was a headline story, today it would be a headline story. They would at least say, well, I executed the guy. But they don't even say that. Here's another story from my website, which again astonishes me. Iraq has a $70 billion surplus. You heard me. Iraq has a budget surplus of $79 billion, and yet they refuse to spend that on reconstruction costs or pay us for the costs of liberating them. Now, what kind of Congress do you have that would permit a country like Iraq, which has a $79 billion surplus, to not pay us back for the cost of the war? They can't pay us back in terms of lost lives, or they can't give legs back to the soldiers who lost legs or eyes or arms or faces. But they have a surplus of $79 billion. From my point of view, that comes right off the top. Off the top, right back into the Treasury. It won't even pay for a fraction. Well, it'll be a fraction of the cost. My estimate is $1 trillion. And that's a rough estimate. Nobody even knows how much money has been printed and sent over on airplanes. That's not even accounted for. We have no idea. There were stories in the beginning of hundreds of millions of dollars in U.S. currency being flown in by a U.S. military aircraft and disappearing. probably to buy off tribesmen. So that would be the hidden hundreds of millions. We know the cost is close to $1 trillion. It's why our currency is weak right now. How many times have I told you other wars have bankrupted nations? Doesn't matter whether you agree or disagree with the war. What you have to know is that this country is fundamentally in its fundamentals near bankrupt. Fundamentally in its fundamentals near bankrupt. And if you don't believe me, you say, I don't know economics. That's fair enough. Of course, I do know economics, but I don't have to justify what I'm about to tell you. At least as of yesterday, we may have dropped it today. There was a one. Here it is. U.S. headed toward bankruptcy, says top budget committee Republican. It's on the right side of michaelsavage.com. And you have to read that story. If it stays on its current fiscal course, we're bankrupt. We know that. So Schwarzenegger has to tell the illegal aliens, sorry, no more health care. The hospitals are closed to you. If you don't have a U.S. Social Security card, you can't come into our emergency rooms. And we're not going to educate you. We're not going to give you free court cases, no housing, no student loans, no nothing. This budget in the state of California and every other state could be balanced overnight if they crack down on payments to illegal aliens. I know that's true. I could fiscally straighten this country out in 90 days. Iraq has $70 billion surplus, refuses to pay U.S. for war costs. Mexican torturer, rapist, murderer, executed, world court defied. You still can't write about Muhammad. This comes to us from the Wall Street Journal. A historical novel came out about Aisha, the young wife of the prophet Muhammad. Random House was about to publish it, and they pulled the book. They pulled the book because they were threatened by, do you know who? Denise Spellberg. That's right. An associate professor of Islamic history at the University of Texas in Austin sent a scathing letter to the publisher and said, don't publish it. She was upset. And so cowardly Random House abruptly called off the publication of the book, torpedoing a novel, showing you that we already have been damaged on so many levels by the Islamic enemy that it's incomprehensible the damage they've done to us. Every time you go to an airport and have to take your shoes off, every time you go to an airport and have to empty your pockets and take your belt off, every time you have to be screened somewhere, you can thank those 19 vermin, primarily from Saudi Arabia, the Wahhabists who came here through the loopholes of immigration. I don't have to repeat the whole story of what liberalism did to us then, because it'll probably be doing it to us again right after the election. That's what we all fear. But now we see censorship. Random House cancels a book about Muhammad, and it's a novel, by the way. We have CAIR trying to shut down my radio show, using me as a fundraising tool. We have the government not defending me. We have the Justice Department not defending me. We have the FBI not defending me. So I'm all alone out here. You think it's fun to be here? You think I enjoy it? I don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy it at all. But if my government will not defend me, I have to defend myself to the best I can. The odds are stacked against me. I'm Daniel in the lion's den. I first judge was a dyed-in-the-wool left-winger appointed by Bill Clinton. You think I'm going to get justice when I go to the Ninth Circuit Court of Schlemiel's? You think I'm going to get justice at the Ninth Circuit Court of Schlemiel's here in San Francisco? 99% of them are far-left activists. Can you imagine? So it's a very big fight. And then I'm defamed by the enemies of truth in Media Matters, supported by, again, the far-left international brigades of George Soros and other nefarious individuals. So there's only so much a person can do or should do or wants to do. And right now, what I'd like to do and want to do and will do is take a break. Be here.
Savage.
I'm going to do something that I've not done on the show ever, and I'm going to read you what was done to these girls. I decided I'm going to read it. It's going to take me longer than I have left in this hour, and I'm going to continue it in the next hour. And I'm going to do this so that the memories of Jennifer Ertman and Elizabeth Pena, who were 14 and 16 years old, respectively, who were brutalized, raped, sodomized, and murdered by this piece of garbage, this fiend who was executed last night and his buddies. So their memories are purified. And make no mistake about it, the liberals don't want you to know what was done to Jennifer and Elizabeth. on June 24th. And by the way, if you're a child, please turn the show off. If you're under the age of 18, please turn the show off. Don't listen to this. It's not really right for you to hear it. But the adults need to hear this so they can understand why we need a death penalty. And they can understand why we need to close the borders. And they can understand why, without borders, language, and culture, we are nothing but mush. Jennifer and Elizabeth Pena, June 24th, 1993, summer night. Girls spend the day together, then they die together. They were last seen by friends at 11:15 that night. They left a friend's apartment to head home because they had to beat summer curfew, which was at 11:30 p.m. They knew they would be late if they took the normal path home, down West 34th Street to T.C. Jester, both busy streets. They also knew they would have to pass a sexually oriented business on that route, so they didn't want to go there. They didn't want to pass a sex shop. So they decided to take a well-known shortcut down a railroad track and through a city park to Elizabeth neighborhood. They never showed up. The next morning, the girls' parents were frantically looking for them, paging them on their pages, calling their friends to see if they knew where they were. No avail. Families filed missing person reports with the Houston Police Department and continued to look for the girls on their own. Then the Ertmans and the Penas gathered friends and neighbors to help them pass out a huge stack of flyers with the girls' pictures all over them, all over the Houston area. 4 days after the girls disappeared, a person identifying himself as Gonzalez calls the Crime Stoppers tips number. He tells the call taker that the missing girls' bodies could be found near T.C. Jester Park at White Oak Bayou. The police are sent to the scene. They search the park. They find nothing. Police helicopter flies over the park. That promptly prompted Mr. Gonzalez to make the 911 call, directing the search to move to the other side of the bayou. When the police followed this suggestion, they found the badly decaying bodies of Jenny and Elizabeth. Jennifer Ertman's dad, Randy Ertman, was about to give an interview regarding the missing girls to a local television reporter when the call came over a cameraman's police scanner that the two bodies had been found. Randy commandeered the news van and went to the scene that was now bustling with police. Randy appeared on the local news that evening, screaming at the police officers who were struggling to hold him back. Does she have blonde hair? Does she have blonde hair? I'll continue when I come back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The souls of Jennifer Ertman and Elizabeth Pena, two little American girls who were 14 and 16 years old when they were abducted, tortured, raped, and killed by a piece of human trash who was executed last night. You see, these girls were innocent. They were just little girls. And these human animals, these subhumans, really, in my opinion. You know, that's a very charged word, and I'm going to use it when it's appropriate. These subhumans who behaved the way wolves would behave over a carcass were executed. One of them was executed last night. And the liberals tried their best to keep that human animal alive. They used every trick in their liberal playbook. But Texas stood up to the vermin in the world court and said, drop dead. He's going across the River Styx. What astonishes me, though, is that this story is not being reported today. I read it last night when he was executed. After a whole day of seeing it on every news channel, that they didn't get their proper Mexican consulate and blah, blah, blah. You'd think today, after he was executed, the department store dummies on CNN, NBC, whatever, would be covering the story. But they're not. They dropped it. And so this is a story that must be told, and I'll tell it once today, and I won't tell it again. It's unnecessary. And I'll continue with the actual story that I just got from deathpenaltyblogspot.com. It's now up on michaelsavage.com so that you can read the details if you wish. But it's about the Mexican torturer, rapist, murderer who was executed in defiance of the scum at the world court. They couldn't find the girls. They were lost. They never came home that night, 14, 16 years old. They take a shortcut through a park. Now they can't be found. The police bungle the investigation. Finally, a tip comes in, and the father now is screaming at the police officers who were struggling to hold him back. Does she have blonde hair? Does she have blonde hair? Fortunately, they did manage to keep the father, Randy, from entering the woods and seeing his daughter's brutalized body and that of her friend Elizabeth. The bodies were very badly decomposed, even for 4 days in Houston's brutal summer heat and humidity, particularly around the head. Examiner later testified that this is how she could be sure as to the horrible brutality of the rapes, beatings, and murders. All you liberals, pay attention. Did you turn the show off yet, libs? You don't want to hear the truth, do you, of what you have unleashed in this country, the beast that you have unleashed in this country? My only prayer is that this doesn't happen to you or your daughters. My only prayer is that the subhumans don't get one of you. The break in solving the case came from the 9/11 call. Who was it traced to? Well, it was traced to the home of the brother of one of the men later sentenced to death for these murders. When the police questioned so-called Gonzalez, he said that he had made the call at his 16-year-old wife's urging. She felt sorry for the families and wanted them to be able to put their daughter's bodies to rest. God bless her. Gonzalez said that his brother was one of the six people involved in killing the girls and gave police the names of all but one, the new recruit whom he did not know. His knowledge of the crimes came from the killers themselves, most of whom came to his home after the murders, bragging and swapping the jewelry they had stolen from these little girls. While Jenny and Elizabeth were living the last few hours of their lives, Peter Cantu, Efrain Perez, Derek Sean O'Brien, Ho Medellin, and Joe's 14-year-old brother were initiating a new member, Raul Villarreal. See, it was a gang initiation. That's how they do it. Either they kill a cop or they rape your daughter. So they're initiating a new member, Raul Villarreal, into their gang known as the Black and Whites. Raul was an acquaintance of Efrain and was not known to the other gang members. They had spent the evening drinking beer and then jumping in Raul. This means that the new member was required to fight every member of the gang until he passed out, and then he would be accepted as a member. Testimony showed that Raul lasted through three of the members before briefly losing consciousness. The gang continued drinking and shooting the breeze for some time and then decided to leave. Two brothers who had been with them but testified that they were not in the gang left first and passed Jenny and Elizabeth, who were unknowingly walking towards their deaths. When Peter Cantu saw Jenny and Elizabeth, he thought it was a man and a woman and told the other gang members that he wanted to jump him and beat him up. He was frustrated that he had been the one who was unable to fight Raul. The gang members ran and grabbed Elizabeth and pulled her down the incline off of the tracks. Testimony showed that Jenny had gotten free and could have run away, but she returned to her friend Elizabeth when she cried out for Jenny for help. I may have to stop in a minute because I just broke my computer by slamming the desk. I swear I've knocked the screen off. So the girl got away, but she ran back to help her little friend. Jenny was screaming, "Help me, help me." For the next hour or so, these beautiful, innocent young girls were subjected to the most brutal gang rapes that most of the investigating officers had ever encountered. The confessions of the gang members that were used at trial indicated that there was never less than two men brutalizing each of the girls at any one time and that the girls were repeatedly raped for the entire hour. One of the gang members later said during the brag session that by the time he got to one of the girls, I'm not going to repeat the phrase, one of the boys boasted the boy who was executed last night, the one that the liberals try to defend, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Breyer, and the others. Breyer. Shall I read their names, the ones who took sympathy for them? Would you like to hear who they are? Oh, you know who they are. They're the same ones who try to take your guns away. The same ones. They have sympathy. The 14-year-old juvenile later testified that he had gone back and forth between his brother and Peter Cantu since they were the only ones there that he really knew and kept urging them to leave. He said he was told repeatedly by Peter Cantu to get some. He raped Jennifer and was later sentenced to 40 years for aggravated sexual assault, which was the maximum sentence for a juvenile. When the rapes finally ended, the horror was not over. Liberals, are you still listening? Liberals, are you still here? You like crime shows, don't you? Well, here's real crime caused by you. You caused this murder. You caused this rape. You caused this killing. You liberals did this to these girls, as sure as I'm sitting here. Because you've made our country a soft sell, a soft sack of butter to all of these gangbangers who laugh at us because of you. They know they have you in their corner when they are caught. They know that. They're not stupid. They're not stupid. So now the rapes are over. Gang members then take Jenny and Elizabeth in the clearing into a wooded area. And they leave the young boy behind saying he's too little to watch. See, they're just about to have their real fun now. The brave, macho men. Jenny is then strangled with the belt of Sean O'Brien, with the two murderers pulling, one on each side until the belt breaks. Part of the belt was left at the murder scene. The rest was found in O'Brien's home. After the belt broke, the killers used their own shoelaces to finish their job. Madeline later complained that the girl wouldn't die and that it would have been easier with a gun. Elizabeth was also strangled with her shoelaces after crying and begging the gang members not to kill them. She bargained with them. She offered to give them her phone number. That's why Elizabeth, two front teeth were knocked out of her brutalized mouth before she died, and that two of Jennifer's ribs were broken after she had died. Testimony showed that the girls' bodies were kicked and their necks were stomped on after the... The juvenile, Mr. Medellin, Venancio Medellin, pled guilty to his charge, and his sentence was reviewed when he turned 18, at which time he was sent to serve the remainder of the sentence in prison. The five killers were tried for capital murder in Harris County, Texas, convicted and sentenced to death. One of them died last night. And you liberals killed these girls as sure as I'm sitting here. You, that's your legacy. Your legacy is the death of these girls. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Filthy subhuman gang members ran and grabbed Elizabeth and pulled her down the incline off of the tracks. Testimony showed that Jenny had gotten free and could have run away, but she returned to Elizabeth when her friend cried out for Jenny to help her. For the next hour or so, these beautiful, innocent young girls were subjected to the most brutal gang rapes. And I'll stop right here because it's now linked up on michaelsavage.com. It should be on every site in America. So you know, understand that we've been overrun. We've been overrun by a... I'm going to stop. I'm just going to stop. I think you get the picture. Our president, of course, is in China right now enjoying the Olympics. Let me take your calls because there's things I would say that I would regret tomorrow, not because I said them, but because I have enough trouble right now. You know, I think it said somewhere that the truth shall set you free. That was true before there were talk radio stations and advertisers. We live in a world of increased cowardice, terrified men in the business who do not really stand up for free speech anymore. And that's really sad, because this is a business that requires the support of stations, the support of station owners, and the support of advertisers. Otherwise, we lose freedom of speech more completely than if the government banned free speech. Free speech is not free. Free speech is not free at all. It's very expensive. Someone's got to pay for it. Thank God I have advertisers who pay for it. I know there are people who want me silenced. I understand that. I guess the liberals don't want to hear about Mr. Medellin's crime. They would find this too offensive. They would say that it shouldn't be on radio. But they didn't want you to hear what these poor innocent boys did to the girls. After all, they were denied consular discussions. So anyway, what's clip one? What is that about? I don't have it.
The bigger your market, the less people you can afford to offend, especially if you're trying to sell them things. Don't offend minorities. Stay away from controversy.
Yeah. Okay, I'll remember that. Anyway, please go to michaelsavage.com. Please download a description of Jose Medellin's brutal crime, and please send it to friends who cry to you about the fact that these poor boys were denied their due process. and send a few copies of this to the Supreme Court, thanking the five who said yes, put the needle in them, and telling the four who didn't want the needle put in them that they ought to read this. Maybe it'll help them understand the kind of crimes that they are protecting. Grand Rapids, Michigan. Larry, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Michael, thanks for taking my call. I do service work in the city of Grand Rapids, and I listen to you as often as I am able to get back in the vehicle. But I am sitting beside the road on my way to another job with my hat off in respect to what you had said earlier about the method of the sanctity of life and how it's preserved.
Yes, I had a caller who said that he's against the death penalty because he believes in the sanctity of life. And I said, yes, I believe in the sanctity of life as well, and that I believe that the execution of their sadistic murderers in fact preserves the sanctity of their life, preserves the sacred memory of their innocent souls by reinforcing our society's abhorrence of the crimes that were committed against them. That's what a society does. It says there are some crimes that are so off the scale of humanity that you die for them. You get killed if you do them because we have a sanctity for life here. Maybe not in the hellhole you come from. Maybe not the cesspool that you crawled out of. Maybe not the hellhole that you came from. But don't bring your pollution to our country. Don't bring your filth into this nation. Keep it back. Does that work for you? It works for me. Works for me. Let the punishment fit the crime. And believe me, a lethal injection didn't fit this crime. Oh, he enjoyed himself. He got fat like a gourded pig. He looked like a fat gourd there on death row. Put on weight. Best medical care. Never had such good care. Clean laundry every day. He had the liberals. Oh, Mr. Medellin, how are you today? Are you being treated well? And he played them like the suckers they are. If not, the lib women are. They get excited. The worse the man is, the more excited they get. They don't like normal men. You know, I knocked out my computer before. I got so worked up. I did. I had to get under the desk here with wires. You have no idea. I'm very worked up over this. Why? Why am I worked up over this particular case? Because to me, this symbolizes everything I've been fighting for in radio since I began in 1994. Borders, language, culture. Had our borders been closed, had our language been upheld, had our culture been supported, had we not inherited a generation of quislings in Congress and quislings in the State House, this wouldn't have happened. Had we still had men able to defend these girls, and believe me, there are plenty of them who would love to. Believe me, there are Texas Rangers down there who knew just what they would have had to do to protect these girls. They probably knew who this gang was. They probably wanted to go in there and wipe them off the planet before this happened. They probably knew what kind of people they were. They knew that they were going to do something like this if they had not already done it before. In the old days, these boys never would have gotten this far. Trust me, in the 1950s, a gang like this would not have lasted inside any American town, not for a week. The cops had ways of getting them out of town, so they never performed any kinds of these acts upon anybody in their town. The police knew who they were, but the police couldn't touch them because of you, because of the liberals, because of this false compassion, because of this weakness, because of the fact that the barbs on our berries were taken off a long time ago by the liberal psychotics who are protected at every step of the way. They're protected at every step of the way, and they leave you naked. Naked to these subhuman gangs. Borders, language, culture would have prevented this. These girls would be alive today. They never would have gotten into the country, and they certainly would have been thrown out of the country if we still had a country. But as you could see, our president, who, by the way, sided with the world court, never forget this, George Bush had the nerve to say to the Texas Supreme Court, oh, you should defer to the world court. See, Bush is already working on his legacy. He wants to be respected when this is all over. So he can finally take his mask off and say, well, I had to do what I had to do. You know, we have a bunch of crackers in that country that I ran. But it's over now. I'm one of you. I'm one of you guys. Got a book deal? Got a consultantship in the UAE?
Savage.
Savage Nation, the Requiem of Mozart is being played in memory of the two girls brutalized by these subhumans, one of whom was sent across the river Styx last night. Of course, the liberals try to give him oars and a new rowboat, but he is in the hands of the devil, where he belongs. San Francisco, KNEW. Joan, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
In total agreement with you on the delight that one of these punk gang bangers finally got his just return. I have been for the death penalty, and I'm still for it, and we passed it twice in California, much to the unfortunate detriment of the liberals. But what my big question is, where were those stupid parents? Why, how dare they allow their teenage girls, in the light of the crime increase the last 5 years, to allow their teenagers to be roaming around, girls, on the streets, not even in their neighborhoods, all over town where they would have had to pass a red light district? My kids would have been home at 13 and 14 and 16. They were.
I understand your outrage and your protectionism for your own children, but don't you think the Ertmans and the Penas have suffered enough that we shouldn't blame them?
Well, the thing is, the parents have the total control of their girls, or they should have, except the public schools have given rights to the children.
Well, if you read the actual story of what happened, the girls weren't doing anything wrong. They were hanging out with their friends. There was a curfew at 11:30. They leave the friend's apartment to head home. They're trying to get home fast. They know if they take the normal street home, they have to pass an X-rated bookstore put in by the liberals in that district. The girls were probably from good families and didn't want to go past the X-rated store that doesn't belong anywhere in America, the filth and the garbage that comes out of the sewer pipes of the twisted minds of Hollywood. So they don't want to go past it. They want to get home faster. They're kids, so they take a shortcut, a very well-known shortcut, down a railroad track and through a city park to their home. They didn't know the gangbangers were in the park. I wouldn't blame the parents. It wasn't 3 in the morning. You know, that's like blaming a girl for wearing a short skirt for getting raped. I'm surprised that a woman would suggest that the parents are at fault here.
Gangbangers and the death penalty, the people. We should close those borders, and I believe in arming the border patrol. Arm them. Shoot to kill.
That's course, absolutely. We should have our National Guard taken out of Iraq and put on our border with Mexico. I agree with you. I got a headache from the story. Houston, Texas. Ken, you're up on the Savage Nation topic, please.
I must say that I'm absolutely appalled that this guy was alive long enough to use my tax money to feed him, keep him well long enough, just so we could kill him.
Well, he gained weight on death row. He never had it so good. He had 3 squares a day. He had new clean clothing. He had liberal women fawning over him, asking him how he felt. He never had it so good.
Well, all over TV now for the last 2 weeks, all the tree-hugging, bleeding-heart liberals, all they've talked about is his poor little life. And those two girls, I was here when all of this happened. And exactly what happened to them was all over TV and all over the newspapers, and all people need to do is relive that just a little bit, and I don't think they would feel quite the same way about this man.
Ken, let me ask you, in the last day, though, since last night, is the media down in Houston covering the execution of this vermin?
Very lightly.
But yes, yesterday they were all up in arms about the fact that he was denied rights, weren't they?
Oh, that they were. Mm. They didn't call the Mexican.
I'm sure that the people of Houston, though, are glad that this guy went where he belongs, aren't you? I mean, sure of that.
For the most part, yes, they are. People here support the death penalty, and that's not the type of activity that we want on our streets.
Well, thank God that the Supreme Court is now tilted in favor of sanity and that the insane liberals have been put into minority. You know, a while ago I wrote an editorial here, Bush's Legacy, the Greatest American President, which is almost paradoxical in a certain way considering how critical I have been of him. But there's two types of criticism. One is an attempt to have constructive dialogue or constructive criticism. The other is negative criticism, which is the type meant to undermine a man and destroy him. I would hope that my criticism of George Bush has been on the positive side, not that it's had any effect whatsoever, But in that regard, I wrote Bush's legacy, the greatest American president, question mark. And I open it with, I'll read you one paragraph. The execution in Texas of Mexican national Jose Medellin, who raped, tortured, and murdered two teenage girls in a gang initiation, despite the objections of the world court, is yet another demonstration of the Supreme Court as George W. Bush's most important legacy. This, combined with their decision upholding the Second Amendment, shows why it was important to have Bush in office instead of a liberal socialist. For all of his faults, George W. Bush appointed solid conservative justices to the bench. It was Alito and Roberts, his appointees, along with Clarence Thomas and Antonin Scalia, who defeated Ginsburg in the radical leftist wing of the court and permitted the execution of this monster. So there it is. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Again, go to the website, MichaelSavage.com, and take a look at the story. I'm not going to leave it up forever. It's painful. But there are many other stories. Iraq has $70 billion in surplus revenues, $79 billion, and they will not pay for their own reconstruction, nor will they reimburse you, the taxpayer, or we, the taxpayers, for the cost of the war. Why is that? Why is our government not demanding reparations for the cost of liberating 24 million Iraqis? This goes beyond whether or not you supported the war. Why aren't they paying for it? Why? What kind of country is this? We're bankrupt. We're out of oil, or let's say we're short of oil. They have oil. They have money, and they won't give it to us. Why? They're not going to give it to us. Well, we gave them freedom. They owe us the oil. They owe us the money. And yet our politicians don't seem to want to do that for reasons only they understand. They're not representing the people. I mean, if you polled the American people and said, Iraq has a $79 billion budget surplus, should Iraq pay the United States for war costs? 90% of people would say yes. Why aren't we asked? Why? Why do we watch an election filled with such trivia as a tire pressure gauge with Alfred E. Newman Obama trying to ridicule John McCain for having pointed out that a tire pressure gauge is not what's necessary to make America energy independent? Why? Why have you accepted such a lowly, lowly debate from such men as these, who are certainly capable of higher levels of debate? Hasn't this gone on long enough, the charade? I would also argue that if Barack Obama believes that inflating tires would save us 3% of our oil usage in some regards, I don't know how he comes up with that number. I'm sure it's fallacious. Someone made it up for him. I am sure that if he added up all of the flights that he took in this endless campaigning, and added up all the flights and car rides that all of his staffers took in this endless campaign, that could account probably for 0.2% of energy savings in this country just by cutting out the campaigning, cutting out the Klieg lights and the airplanes and the fuel for the airplanes. But I go a step further. There's so many ways that they could save money on energy if they really cared, in addition to cutting back on this endless campaign. Certainly the tire pressure gauge is a wonderful idea, but I frankly haven't met anyone who rides around on underinflated tires. I seem to think everyone keeps their tires properly inflated, in fact, overinflated. I know I have since I'm 17 years old. I don't know anyone who says, you know what, I think I'll let some air out of my tires. I really want to increase wear and tear on my tires. I love that, and I love lowering my mileage. So I think that because I'm a Republican, I'm going to wear out my tires faster, and I'm going to decrease my gas mileage because I want to show how evil I can be. The whole argument is so absurd it isn't worth discussing, but that's why they're discussing it, to keep your mind off Jose Medellin and the gangs that are out of control in America. And if you think that this rape, torture, and murder of these two girls is a solitary case, you're wrong. There are many cases like this hanging fire. In fact, there are 49 other Mexican nationals on death row, incidentally. Salt Lake City. Mike, you're next up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Two comments on this. First off, that argument that the sanctity of life applies to murderers is false. The sanctity of life does not apply to murderers because the Bible demands the death penalty of murderers. Both the Old Testament and the New Testament does. And
I know that. That's right. I've read both. And you start with an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. I agree with that. As far as turn the other cheek goes, if you turn the other cheek, you wind up without either cheek.
Well, Romans chapter 13, verse 4 says, and I'll just sum it up, that rulers on earth are to be the ministers of God, and they are to be the executioners to anyone who does evil. They're to swing the sword, and they're not to swing it in vain.
Well, so, there you go. That's right, not to swing it in vain. This certainly wasn't swinging it in vain. This guy was guilty, and he was given numerous chances for appeal. And it was just trickery that his lawyers tried to use at the end and try to take it away from the American people and bring so-called justice to the world court, which, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't exist. There is no world court. There is no world court, as far as I'm concerned. It's a fabrication of a group of Marxists who want to take over the world. That's my opinion. Thank you for the call. Houston, Texas. Charles, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mike, I enjoy your show, and I just want to say, as once a liberal, I agree with you that liberalism is a mental illness.
Well, no, and the thing to remember is that it is not an irreversible mental disorder. I think I should add that in order to give people hope. You can be a liberal at one point, but at some point you could say, you know, by God, I'm not a liberal anymore. It is a mental disorder, and I want to cure myself. I'm going to throw away these crutches. So go on, please. Don't let me interrupt you.
And I apologize, but just the thought that liberals try to compromise with the world courts about a reprieve. These young girls didn't have a reprieve. And we see the same thing happening in Guantanamo Bay. Those terrorists, they've lost their human rights because they're not humans anymore to me. Those are animals. You've lost your human rights.
But you're right, Charles. Do you know that several of the people released from Guantanamo because of the intervention of psychotic liberal lawyers have been found back on the battlefield in Afghanistan and Iraq? They went right back to kill our men. This is very serious business. This is no longer a debate. It's life and death, and this country is in a death throw. Thank you very much. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Mexican torture, rapist, murder, executed, world court, defied. Topic number two, description of Jose Medellin's brutal crime. You can read it for yourself. Share it with others. Three, Iraq has $70 billion surplus, yet refuses to pay for reconstruction or for the cost of the war. Topic four, you still can't write about Muhammad, and that's about a book that was just burned by Random House over the complaints of a liberal professor. There are many other stories. Big donors key to Obama's record haul comes from the International Herald Tribune. This is phenomenally interesting. I found it last night. You think that Obama's raising $50 million or so a month from grassroots efforts. You're mistaken. The fact of the matter is, the biggest contributors to Obama consist of trial lawyers. That's right. Now, why would trial lawyers want Obama to be president and not McCain? I think you can figure that one out. Here's another little story for you. Latino immigrants suddenly avoiding the DMV. The number of Spanish-speaking people taking Oregon's driving test plummeted, just as an executive order took effect requiring test takers to provide valid Social Security numbers. Isn't that shocking? Isn't that shocking? It's like when I've gone to vote all these years and I've tried to show a license and the little old ladies in tennis sneakers, the good little liberals with white hair who I once trusted said, oh, no, I don't want to see any ID. And I would say, oh, yes, why don't you want to see ID? What do you mean you don't want to see ID? They're bussing him in here, lady. What do you want to call for backup now? See, we need voter ID. We've needed it forever. The reason the liberals don't want any ID in the voting booth is because their entire Ponzi scheme is built upon the base, which consists of illegal aliens. I'll be right back. Savage. West. Welcome back to the Savage Nation, the death of the West. Let us hope that it is a death that can be resurrected. But there's no question that the West that I grew up in is dead. The question that remains is, can it come back from the dead? Not whether it's going to die. It died. This country died. The only question is, can it come back? Can there be a second coming of the United States of America is the only question. People say, oh, is it going to go? It's gone. Make no mistake about it. When you have four people on the Supreme Court who have the sanctity of marriage, who have ruled that we don't have a right to bear arms, who have ruled that we have no right to execute those who rape and brutally murder children, we've lost this country. It's incomprehensible that in my day, people of this low, twisted mentality would have been a judge, let alone a Supreme Court justice, let alone that they would have gone from the gutters of Brooklyn Law School to the black robe of the Supreme Court. It's incomprehensible that a country would be in the grip of the American Trial Lawyers Association. It is incomprehensible that a man without experience like Barack Hussein Obama, people don't even know much about his birth. They don't know much about his background. They know that he's hung around with terrorists, with leftists, etc., that he would have ever gotten this far had there not been a vast conspiracy to advance him to this level. Make no mistake about it, there's a vast conspiracy, a vast left-wing conspiracy to hoodwink the American people into thinking that this front man for the Marxist agenda is a legitimate candidate. Make no mistake about it. They are so powerful, this cabal, that they were able to knock out Hillary Clinton. Think about it. Hillary Clinton's no Marxist. She's just an opportunist. Two different things. But this guy and his machine has been able thus far, it is so powerful, it's controlled by so much money, to move out of the picture two of the most powerful people in the history of the Democrat Party, Bill and Hillary Clinton. How did they do this? How could they get over on the Clinton machine is the question. Where they get the power and the money, and who are they? Don't tell me it's the little people, because it isn't the little people. So we don't have a country of the type that I grew up in anymore. The only question is how much further down it goes before it comes back up from the dead. That's if it ever comes back up. I don't think we've hit bottom at all.
The Savage Nation.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I used to dream of going to sea, and then I did, and all the promises were fulfilled and then some. The sea has never failed me yet. I would never go on a cruise ship again as long as I live, but if you do, God bless you. Have a nice time eating 17 times a day and making believe you're rich, the whole thing. Oh boy, I can do without it. If you're really rich, you wouldn't be on the ship. You'd be on your own ship. Just like people who put on airs in first class. You ever see what's in first class on an airline today? It's like a subway. It's like the BMT. I came back from Las Vegas. I know what first class is, but I never saw anything like it. My luck, I had to get a group of Frenchies. I swear to God, I don't know how. My luck, they were from France. Dirty. They still don't bathe. I don't get it. I thought that was like a joke in the 50s, that the French don't bathe because of shortage of soap. They stank. The mother was wearing a sweatsuit. The children, when they looked like that, you know that porcine look from northern France where they eat like a lot of mushrooms? They start to take on the look of the animals that root for mushrooms. They have that porcine look. I didn't understand it. But it wasn't the fact that they were the physiognomy. It was the smelly clothing, the underarm odor. They threw like napkins in the aisle. It reminded me of a short line bus going to Monticello in 1957. You know, ugh, give me the nut. Throw the nut on the floor. Give me more nut. Give me another drink. Drop the cup. And having a French, horrible. What a first class. Because if you really have money, you have your own jet. There's no such thing as first class in America. You never see people in first class because they don't want to know you. They have their own planes. That's the joke of it. That's the whole joke. Never mind upgrade. Just pay for the first class. It's still the same thing. They didn't even have a nut on America West. There's no beverages served on this on this flight. I mean, no hot beverages, only cold beverages. Oh, I love traveling. I really do. I don't sleep for one second wherever I go. Joseph Aboud mattress doesn't matter. Take my own pillow doesn't matter.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
To the Savage Nation. If you've been listening to the show for the last hour or two, which many of you have, I know that we had a technical glitch toward the end of the last hour. I was in the middle of a discussion of the death of America, where I said to you that it's died. Certainly it has died, only it's not died its final death yet, and it's going to get much worse before it gets better. And then I said the only question is not whether it's dead, but whether America can come back and have a second coming or a second incarnation. That's how I see the story. And the story that triggered this is on michaelsavage.com. And the reason it's there is because it's almost nowhere else to be found. I did not know. Well, let's put it this way. I did know how biased the midstream media is. That I know. But I'm actually stunned at their stupidity. They're not that smart. They spend days arguing that the Mexican torturer, rapist, and murderer didn't get equal rights and fair rights, and he shouldn't be executed. And they didn't tell you what he had done to the two little girls. They didn't describe Jose Medellin's brutal crime, which I put up on michaelsavage.com. But what shocks me is that after he was executed last night, none of them are covering the story. You'd think they'd cover the story today and say, well, despite the intervention of the World Court, the rubes in Texas went ahead and executed this poor man. Why didn't they do that? And I think the reason is because they don't even want you to remember what Jose Medellin did to Jennifer Erdman and Elizabeth Pena when they were 14 and 16 years old. They don't want you to know that they still have fathers who are alive whose hearts are broken permanently. They didn't want you to know what they did to them, that they raped them two at a time, one of them. And then when the rapes were over, the girls' torture just began. The gang members took Jenny and Elizabeth from the clearing into a wooded area, and they strangled one of them with the belt of Sean, with two of these fiends pulling one on each side until the belt broke. After the belt broke, the fiends used her own shoelaces to finish their job. And the wonderful, innocent Mr. Medellin, who the libs were crying over just yesterday, later complained that she wouldn't die, and that it would have been, quote, easier with a gun, unquote. Then the next girl, it was her turn. She was also strangled with her shoelaces after she cried and she begged the gang members not to kill them. She bargained with them after her teeth were knocked out and she had been brutalized by this. She offered to give them their phone number so they could get together again, this poor little child. Her teeth were knocked out before she died by these brave, brave macho men. Two of Jennifer's ribs were broken after she had died by these brave, brave, culturally superior men. Testimony showed that the girls' bodies were kicked and their necks were stomped on after the strangulations in order to, quote, make sure that they were really dead. The five killers were tried for capital murder in Harris County, Texas, convicted and sentenced to death. And since then, the liberals have been in overdrive trying to claim that they didn't deserve to die. Well, I argue the exact opposite. Thank God they're dead. One of them, anyway. I had a caller who's against the death penalty who said that he believes in the sanctity of life. I said, well, I believe in the sanctity of life as well. And that is why I'm in favor of the death penalty, precisely because I believe in the sanctity of life. He said, well, how can that be? How can that be, Socrates? And I said to the interlocutor, Socrates says that because he believes in the sanctity of life, he is in favor of the death penalty. How can that be, master? Because I believe, said Socrates, that the execution of their sadistic murderer, in fact, preserves the sacred memory of their souls by reinforcing this society's abhorrence of the crimes committed against these poor little innocent girls, said Socrates.
to the interlocutor. 1-800-449-8255. If you think I'm making all this up for effect and I don't believe a word I say, as many see, that's how the liberals get to you. First they say you don't really mean what you say. Then they say you really mean what you say. Then they say you don't really mean what you say, but you do really mean what you say. Then they try to crucify you for what you don't mean what you say. Then they try to crucify you for what you do mean what you say. In other words, they're the fascist hangman with the black hoods. And it's because of you liberal, socialist, progressive vermin that these two girls were tortured and murdered on that day in 1993. You did it. You did it. You did it. You tortured them, you rats, you. I only pray one thing. I only pray that your girls, that your wife, doesn't come upon a gang at some time in their life. I pray to God that they're not abducted out of a shopping center or off a street. I pray to God that your wife or your daughters are not the victims of a gang in the United States of America, because make no mistake about it, the gangs are right now out of control. Here in San Francisco, a father, Mr. Bologna, he has a name, and his two adult sons were shot down and murdered in cold blood because of Gavin Newsom, because of District Attorney Kamala Harris, and because of the other rat vermin liberal scum who should be in prison for the rest of their lives as being accessories to murder. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, the midstream media continues to fawn over their chosen candidate, the anointed one, Barry Obama. And apparently to them, he can do no wrong. Jeff Kuhner is a columnist with the Washington Times, and he's been following our media's failure to report stories that we need to hear in order to make an informed choice during this election. Jeffrey Kuhner, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to be with you.
You say in a recent column that the media is ignoring some important info about Barry Obama that we need to hear?
Michael, essentially the column really makes two points. The first point is that if you look at Obama's policies and what he's proposing, he is someone who is to the left of any major liberal Democratic presidential candidate going all the way back to George McGovern. That includes Kerry, Al Gore, Bill Clinton, even Jimmy Carter. This is a man who wants to raise income taxes, he wants to raise Social Security taxes, he wants to raise dividend taxes. He wants to raise capital gains taxes. He wants to increase spending, not by $10 billion or $100 billion, but literally nearly $1 trillion in new government spending. He wants to nationalize health care. He is a radical on abortion. He's, in fact, pro-partial birth abortion. He wants to renegotiate NAFTA. And, Michael, I could just keep going down the line. And so when you look at this man's record, and you look at this man's policies and what he's advocating, he is as close to a European-style socialist as we have ever come to in this country in terms of a major Democratic presidential candidate. And I believe that is one of the reasons, one, but not the main reason, but one of the reasons that his appeal is now slipping away in the heartland, it is slipping away out west, it is slipping away in the south, and why I believe McCain has now tightened up the race considerably.
You say that Obama's recent trip overseas was not a success?
Contrary to conventional media wisdom, his recent world tour was not a smashing success. The liberal press corps, especially here, Michael, I got to tell you, the Washington Post, MSNBC, CNN, I mean, they were fawning, going on, oh, it was beautifully stagecraft, beautiful photo ops. He looks presidential. He looks like a world leader. Michael, I believe the very opposite is happening, which is why he's dropped 10 percentage points ever since he came back from that trip.
Well, why is that?
In that trip, when in particular when he went to Berlin, of all places in the world, Berlin, the cradle of Nazi Germany, the cradle of Kaiser's Germany, where hundreds of millions of Europeans were slaughtered by those regimes, in which American boys, by the hundreds of thousands, had to die to liberate Europe from their authoritarian, oppressive governments. That place, Obama went and in front of 200,000 cheering fans, said he was going to, he was apologizing for America, saying that, quote unquote, we had not lived up to our ideals around the world. For this man to have gone on foreign soil, and in Berlin of all places, to criticize and make excuses for the United States, I think really turned the world, not only turned some people in the world off, but it turned a lot of Americans off.
True.
And Michael, the bigger point was this. When he went with French President Nicolas Sarkozy, and he said with Sarkozy, when he was asked by reporters, why do you think you are so well-liked among many Europeans? Obama said this, and I believe it is going to cost him the election if the Republicans exploit it and make the American people aware of it. He said that he is loved by many Europeans because as commander-in-chief, he will come out and not only defend America's interests, but as he put it, I will take into account and consideration the interests, viewpoints, and perspectives of all nations in the world. And then he said this, I do not believe that my role as commander-in-chief is to, quote-unquote, take into account only the narrow strategic interests of the United States.
Oh, my God.
In other words, Michael, he basically told everybody at that press conference and every European leader that he met that this man is not running for president of the United States. He is running for president of the European Union, and he is running for secretary general of the United Nations.
How could this be going on?
If he wants to run for president of the world, let him run for president of the world. But I have a newsflash for him. And this is something that most Americans in their gut and in their heart understand perfectly well. When you run for president of the United States, you are running to be commander-in-chief of this country. You are here to defend the national interests and the values of this country. You are not there to take into account the views, perspectives, and interests of other nations around the world. Your job is to put America first and foremost. By saying that, Michael, I believe that now this race has fundamentally changed. Contrary to conventional wisdom, all the thinking out there is this race is really about Obama versus Obama. That if Obama just runs a good, disciplined campaign, he should beat McCain. The problem with that argument, Michael, is with his global tour, he has now given McCain the opening that he needs to crush Obama in November. And I believe that if the Republicans are smart, they will use Obama's words against him, and they will rally the American people, and they will show him for the slick con man and for the radical leftist and anti-American that he is at his core.
Well, but does McCain have the gumption to run with this?
Michael, what I'm hearing from operatives very close to the McCain campaign is that they understand full well that especially the speech in Berlin, they believe, did not play well in the heartland. It may have played well with the media elites, but it did not play well in the heartland. And Michael, in particular, when he went up in front of those 200,000 fawning, cheering crowds, and what the mainstream media will not tell you, by the way, is that there was a free concert and free beer given out at that event. That was one of the major reasons why he had 200,000 people, but let that go. When he went up there and he said, after the Berlin Wall fell down, there are other walls that need to come down. And by virtue of his position, of Obama's position as the potential next president of the United States, all these other walls are going to come coming down. The walls between races, the walls between tribes, the walls between nations, even the walls between Christians, Muslims, and Jews. In other words, Obama was promising the people of Germany, Europe, and the world that literally he was going to do something that Jesus Christ himself couldn't do, that Muhammad couldn't do, that Moses couldn't do, or that Buddha couldn't do. He was going to unite everybody, all of humanity. It is this kind of hubris and the arrogance and the presumptuousness, frankly, the kookiness, that I think is now rubbing Americans the wrong way. And now you're already seeing it with certain ads comparing Obama to Britney Spears and Paris Hilton. In other words, that this man is fundamentally not serious. That this is a man who sees himself as a sort of the first political world pop celebrity. And that at his core, he's an empty suit. He is somebody who literally will give you pie-in-the-sky, utopian speeches that are utterly disconnected from reality. And that literally he is a self-absorbed narcissist. I mean, he literally is somebody who's now, if you take his word seriously, if this is a man who truly believes in his heart of hearts, I mean, this is the question I would ask him at a debate if I were McCain. I'd say, if you really believe that that you can end all these walls between nations, races, tribes, religions, something that has never been done in the history of mankind. My friend, you're crazy. Do you really believe you are a Messiah? Do you really believe you are the second coming? If McCain hits him on this issue, Obama is finished. He has made himself potentially into a caricature of himself. Republicans know this, Michael. They're going to come out with even more ads. What they're going to do, especially in the month of August, is they know that this is the month to really hit Obama and hit him hard. You're going to see more blistering ads. And, Michael, I'm going to come out now and I'm going to say it, and I'm going to predict this on the Savage Nation. This race is now McCain's to lose.
Wow.
I believe that now, in a Democratic year, with Democrats winning at almost every level, whether it be congressional, state, local races, with the economy flailing, with the war in Iraq unpopular, Obama should win this thing easily. What's going to happen instead, Michael, is that McCain, unless he really blows it, unless he has a disaster in the debates, McCain will win this campaign. Because now Obama is slowly being unmasked for the charlatan and for the radical liberal left-winger that he is. And Michael, mark my words, McCain will win in November because Obama fundamentally doesn't have the judgment, the experience, and I'm going to say it, the character to be president of the United States.
What are you hearing about this from the Demon Cats?
Michael, I had a conversation recently with a very high-ranking Democratic operative, somebody who is very, very close to the Hillary Clinton team. And what that person is telling me is this. In private, the Clintons have also concluded that they believe Obama will lose in November. In fact, the words that were used to me were, not only will he lose, they believe that he will get, quote, crushed by McCain. And this is why Hillary no longer wants the VP slot. And you're already seeing Bill on the campaign trail, as you saw recently, saying, I'm not a racist. They played the race card against me. Obama's people, you know, attacked me unfairly. He's already, the Clintons are already starting to stab Obama in the back. They sense that he is weak, that he is vulnerable, and that he's clearly very beatable.
Jeffrey Kuhner, thanks for being on The Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We're playing the bells of liberty, liberty bells in the Savage Nation, because once again, we can be proud to be Americans in that Texas asserted its sovereignty and executed a subhuman last night. And if you think that I'm being extreme in my language, go to michaelsavage.com and read what this animal did to those two little girls. But now, if you think that he is the only gangbanger prowling the streets of America, having fun with the people of America because we've become a bunch of weaklings. There's another story that should get your ire up. Illegal immigrant seeks reprieve from Thursday execution. Tomorrow, a Honduran makes claims similar to the Medellin case, alleging international treaty violations during his arrest for an Arlington slaying. All you got to do is look at the man's eyes, the shaved head. Look at his dead eyes. Oh, you've probably seen one of them recently around your neighborhood, seeing if he can strike at you, because they're predators, these gangbangers, and you're the prey. And your government is siding with the predators, not the prey. And so I'll read you the story. Huntsville. When Eliberto Chi showed up at a men's clothing store in suburban Dallas, he was a familiar face because he'd once worked there as a tailor. And when he returned after closing time, the same evening, to say he'd left his wallet behind, his former boss, Armand Pagliotta, let him in. Then Chi pulled a gun. By the time he fled with the money bag, Pagliotta was shot dead, and another employee had been shot and wounded. A third employee and assistant manager hid beneath a rack of clothes, called 911, and left the phone line open. Chi's voice was captured on tape as he hunted for the hiding assistant manager, urging her in Spanish to, quote, come to the front of the store. Chi jumped into a waiting car as police were en route to the Arlington store. The tape would be played for jurors at Chi's capital murder trial, where he was convicted and condemned. Chi, age 29, from Honduras, is set for execution tomorrow. He'd be the second foreign-born convicted murderer in Texas this week to die, and the second to seek a reprieve because of what lawyers argued were international treaty violations when he was arrested. Prosecutors said there was no doubt of his guilt. Not only was there eyewitness testimony, but that assistant manager got out a 9/11 call, and you could hear Chi in the background on the phone said, Mike Meyer, a former Tarrant County assistant DA who prosecuted Chi. It was pretty solid evidence right there. Witnesses said that when Pagliotta, age 56, shoved the gun-wielding Chi and started running, he was fatally shot. In September, Chi, the Honduran, was spared from execution when the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals stopped his scheduled punishment after the U.S. Supreme Court agreed to consider whether lethal injection procedures were unconstitutionally cruel. When the Supreme Court earlier this year upheld the method as proper, his date was reset for Thursday. Chi was in the United States illegally at the time of Pagliotta's 01 slaying. Lawyers for the Central American illegal said that Chi was unable to contact anyone from his government, a violation of an international treaty, blah, 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 after his arrest in California and extradited to Texas. It's an argument similar to the one raised earlier this week by Mexican-born Jose Medellin, who was X years ago. But unlike Medellin, Chi was not among some 50 death row inmates around the country, all Mexican-born, who the International Court of Justice said should have new hearings in U.S. courts, blah, blah, blah. President Bush asked states to review the cases, and on and on and on. And so Medellin was killed last night, finally executed, making him the fifth inmate executed this year in Texas. On Tuesday, a state judge in Tarrant County refused a request from Chi's lawyer, Wes Ball, to withdraw Chi's execution date until legislation was enacted to formalize procedures for reviews of capital cases involving foreign nationals. Houston attorney Terry O'Rourke, who's been involved in the case, said it's a significant violation of international law. It's just not good. You know, Terry, why don't you go back where you came from if you don't like the laws in America? Go ply your trade in Honduras. That's where you belong. Attorneys like this don't belong in America. They're un-American. They belong in Honduras. They belong in Mexico. They belong in The Hague. They don't belong in America. Anyway, there it is. Chi would say little about the crime in an interview with the AP shortly before his execution date last year. He said, quote, "My situation is not about being innocent or guilty. My rights were violated. I'm a Christian. I know about the Lord. If it's the Lord's will, things happen. I have great peace in my mind and soul." He said he slipped into the United States through Canada. Chi was arrested in Reseda, California, northwest of L.A., about 6 weeks after the robbery and shootings when his 18-year-old pregnant girlfriend, Anchor Baby, say Anchor Baby, turned him in, accusing him of assault. The couple had been on the run for 43 days, crisscrossing the country from Iowa to Minnesota, blah, blah, blah. At the time of his arrest, authorities said the couple had been planning to flee to Honduras. His girlfriend's brother, Hugo Sierra, is serving a life prison term for being Chi's getaway driver at the clothing store. Four other prisoners are set to die this month, including two more next week. They're among at least 15 Texas inmates with execution dates in the coming months. I rest my case, ladies and gentlemen. They're murdering. They're killing. They're like the scythe across America. They're plying their murderous trade because of liberals like you. They know they can murder and get away with it. All they got to do is cite the fact that they're being unfairly tried in racist America. Again, I will repeat my prayer. This is Michael Savage's prayer. I only pray, and this is my only prayer, that liberals listening to this show who have sympathy for the devil do not have to, and I repeat it again, do not have to pick up their wife or their daughter from a field after they have been raped and their heads bashed in by one of these subhumans. Houston, Texas. Al, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, I have two important points. The first one is that all the credit in the world goes to Governor Rick Perry, who under tremendous pressure stood up to the world court, the Mexican government, the President of the United States, the Secretary of State, and the Attorney General.
God bless him.
Forces came to
God bear. Bless. God bless the governor. How come he's such a stand-up guy?
Well, I don't know about that, but all the conservatives in Texas are very, very proud of this man today.
Well, I am too. I am too. Thank God he did not bend to the President of the United States nor to the World Court. Why would George Bush have caved into the World Court? What's your opinion on that, Al? You're down in Houston.
Yes. Well, I think what it is they're thinking like you talk about the one world government type thing, where he's worried about what the world thinks, what the Europeans think, what the Mexicans think. But
he's not concerned about what Texans think, even though he lives in Crawford.
That's what amazed me. I was very amazed that he took that side. And
well, but to be positive, though, you're saying Governor Rick Perry stood up to all of these forces.
The pressure that he was under.
But, Al, you say on the screen that I'm looking at that you work with the raped girl's mother. How so?
Yes, for 4 years, I worked with Elizabeth Pena's mother, Melissa. And a sweeter woman you've never met in your life. And I
how did you? In what capacity did you work with her, Al?
I was a quality manager at their heat treating company in Houston, Texas, and I worked with her closely for 4 years.
Has she passed? Is the mother still here?
Yes, she's still here.
No, I mean it because I saw the father in a photograph at the execution of Madeline last night, but not the mother.
Her picture was in the paper the other day. So she's still there.
They're good people, aren't they? They're really good people, good family people.
They're wonderful people. Wonderful people.
Yeah, because I couldn't believe I had a caller here who called and blamed the parents for letting the girls walk home late at night. I thought that was really unfair.
Well, you know, the path that they took is the path that I took many times. There's an apartment right there. And out the back, like you said, if you go down West 34th, it's a long way, and you go past it. That sex shop is still there on the corner that was there that day.
And the girls didn't want to go down that street because the sex store is on that street, put there by the American Trial Lawyers Association, the ACLU, and the other vermin in America who have poisoned every neighborhood with their sewer filth.
That's right. And the other point I'd like to make quickly, the Mexican people, there's an article in the paper today, the Mexican people have mixed emotions. The good people of Mexico know that this guy was scum. And
Well, let me ask you something. The girl who was killed, her name was Pena. Is she not of Mexican ancestry herself?
Her father was Adolf Pena, who's of Mexican extraction, and her mother is...
Right. So this is not about Mexicans or Mexico. This is about subhumans who killed an innocent girl and tortured her to death first. That's what it's really about, isn't it?
Yes. All of Houston was and has for the last 15 years been just torn apart by this story.
Well, I'm so glad he was finally sent across the River Styx last night. But now we have another one here I just read. A Honduran now in Huntsville, Texas, trying to use the same stunt of international BS to say that he shouldn't be executed. You know anything about that case?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, we'll see about it, I'm sure, tomorrow when the department store dummies at ABC, CBS, NBC, and CNN start banging the drum, you know, about his poor, hard life and how he should be spared because he didn't get a chance to call the Mexican consulate after he executed the tailor he worked for. Thanks for the call. So this is a very hot story. I'm still stunned. I go around the media. It's still not up on the web. It's up on michaelsavage.com with all of the gory details, and I did it not to get you to read it, but to pass it around so that you never forget these poor girls and what they suffered through instead of worrying about the poor Mexican national, Jose Medellin, who raped, tortured, and murdered the two girls with his friends in a gang initiation rite. And despite the objections of the World Court and the four liberals on the Supreme Court, you've got to remember what happened to these children. You've got to remember that. So... let's go to the callers now on so many other topics. New York City, Ari, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, it's truly an honor. I want to tell you, I am one of around 70,000 observant Jewish listeners to your show who listen, well, should I say religiously. And as a matter of fact, I have donated twice to your legal fund. I just want to
Thank you.
I think that because you have so many Jewish listeners, and we really, really love hearing what you say, you know, unlike what this rabbi said about a week ago. I think that I've thought about this, and I've come to the conclusion that I hereby want to dub you Rabbi of the Radio.
Well, because my audience goes across many religious lines and many people who are atheists but believe in the truth, I thank you very much for the honorary title, but I will have to defer back to just Michael Savage, talk show host.
All right.
right. So, Michael Savage, this is my second point. We see that Barack Obama...
If you really want to bestow a title on me, you can call me Dr. Savage because I earned a PhD from a great university, a real one. It wasn't a mail-order degree, nor did I get it because I donated a certain amount of money. But please go ahead.
Michael, you know that I know a lot of rabbis were also PhDs. But anyway, I want to say Barack Obama is being fawned upon by the media so much in their, you know, with the coverage. And on the other hand, John McCain is being alienated by the media, especially by the New York Times. And with all the polls and just with common sense, we know, and after Jeff Kuhner, who could say it better than he can, we all know that John McCain is going to become the president of the United States.
And yeah, he's pulling ahead now because the more people see of Obama, the less they like him. And even though McCain leaves a lot to be desired, they'll take their chances with a true American who has a real war record and is really, let's say, more trustworthy than this invented man. So what's your question?
So my question is, isn't the media burning their bridges behind them? What's going to happen when John McCain becomes president and the media, especially the New York Times, has this whole record of just ignoring John McCain? I mean,
they're not burning their bridges. McCain will reach out to them because he's a compromiser, so they have nothing to lose, and they know that. He's a compromiser, and that's why they know there's nothing to lose, and that's why they can be so subjective in their coverage, even though they, you know, whatever credibility they may have had left, they have no credibility left at all. Not with the average American reader, Ari. But I truly believe, to just put it in the bigger context, that creaky, groany, whatever, McCain, he's going to pull ahead by a large majority if he's not already way ahead. I think the polls are completely false. They're all distorted. And I do not know of one person who's ever been polled. Ari, before you go, you say that you know many Orthodox Jewish people. Have they ever been polled?
No. What are you talking about? Polled? We don't
know. See, there you go. You don't answer pollsters. I don't answer pollsters. No conservative I know answers pollsters. So the polls are rubbish. Rasmussen, I call her Rasmussen. Zogby is a front man for somebody, in my opinion. I don't trust him. So tell me which poll I should trust.
Well,
the AP Ipsos poll? You know, I'm one of the only people in America who's actually researched. You ever see this Ipsos, AP/IPSOS, like a news service in a poll? People don't know who Ipsos is. It's a foreign-owned firm. Of nefarious ownership. It's another sneaky little attempt to distort American politics by sneaking into the news and polling business. You look up Ipsos and find out who owns them. It's like AP Ipsos? What do you mean Ipsos? Follow the money. You'll find out it goes all the way back to Dubai. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Memories, dreams, and deflections. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Look, all the stories I covered today and more that I couldn't get to are on michaelsavage.com, and the site's as good as the show lately, and I want to thank Art for posting it so well. And what I want to say now is the subject matter today was so important to me. Last night at about 11:40, when I read that this guy had been executed, a lightness came over me, a sense of liberation. I was terrified that the U.S. Supreme Court would defer to the World Court, and I would say it's all over, but they didn't. They did not. They reaffirmed states' rights here. I mean, who do these World Court people think they are? They have a right to tell us how to run our country? They've done such a great job in Belgium. They've done such a great job in Nigeria and Russia that they should dictate to us, the land of the free and the home of the brave, how we should run our country? No. No. We don't believe that's true. Now, here's what I'm going to do for you. A few weeks ago, I got very angry about HBO and canceled my subscription because of what they've done in running that hate piece about our troops. A piece of human offal from Rolling Stone magazine, inveigled his way in as an embedded reporter, so-called, and came back and produced a series on HBO that I despise. I watched one segment. It's sedition. And here's what I said then. Listen. When you see the behavior of these psychopaths in Hollywood, these bully punks who run everything in Hollywood, getting even with the world because they were losers in high school, and now they take their deviancy and impose it upon everyone's face, and they destroy every value that was ever valued in this country. When you see these bully punks in Hollywood creating one movie after another that turns our troops into Callies into Nazis, and every movie fails. When you see that rat bum from Rolling Stone magazine who should be rounded up under sedition laws, that's not free speech. To go in as an embedded reporter to the U.S. Marines in Iraq and come back and create a series for that rotten, stinking HBO, which I'm canceling, by the way. You should for this thing, General. What do you need it for? The Sopranos are over. You only bought it for The Sopranos. And this is the best they could follow it up with? A piece created by a far-left maniac embedded with the troops? And this is what he comes back and does to them? This loser, this nobody, this freak? And why do they keep doing this to this country? Why do these bully punks in Hollywood, why do they keep defacing and defaming America? What do they have to hate about this country? What is it that they hate about America? They have everything in the world. And why do they hate this country? Go figure out why the creeps in Hollywood hate the country so much. What is it that they want to see happen in this country? I can't answer for their madness, but I can tell you that they're the end of the arc of liberalism. I see it a whole new arc. It's the arc of conservatism. And by the way, it's happening in every sphere of American society amongst the young. And they're going to come out and they're going to be outing. They're going to out themselves because they can't take it anymore. They cannot take the hatred of our troops. They cannot take the hatred of the flag. They cannot take the hatred of the country itself. And I'm telling you, if you're listening to this show, whether you work in Hollywood or academia or in business, wherever you work, please speak out. You don't have to yell it out. You don't have to get yourself fired. What country do you think you live in that you're afraid to express your political opinions? You're afraid to express your love for America? You're afraid to support the troops? Who's going to hurt you? Some academician? Some punk in Hollywood? Some bully who was pushed around in high school who now has the power of a movie studio? He's going to hurt you? You have nothing to fear but fear itself. You're afraid of your own shadow.
This is Michael. I believe every word that I just said, and I approve of the monologue, and I'm not running for office. I'm only running to be what I am to you, which is a voice of freedom and a voice of truth right here on the Savage Nation. I want to thank you for listening, and I know that I raised you up, and I know that you feel good today because justice has been done in Texas. God bless America.
Savage.